Hi, my name is Andrew Pontius.
And I'm Will French.
And this is Edge Cases, a podcast about often Apple-related software development and best-selling S&M fiction. This is episode 13. We're recording on Saturday, August 11th, 2012. What's our topic this week, Wolf?
AppleScript's glorious failure.
Okay. Well, just one? Anyway. Okay. So some quick follow-up from last time around. I was talking about app code last week, right? And I mentioned that there was a list of companies that use JetBrains. And my assumption was the page that I was on was showing companies that just used app code. Mm-hmm. But it's not just app code. The page I was looking at, which is jetbrains.com/why. Why JetBrains? Why? Is for all of their products and presumably mostly for their Java products. And funnily enough, Apple is on the list.
Okay.
And another thing real quick. We got an email from Michael Buckley about import, which I believe we talked about not last week, but a little while ago.
Right.
And he wrote in to inform us that there was a page on the GNU.org website, which I will put in the show notes, which talks about why they don't like import. And they say import is not a well-designed feature. It requires the users of a header file to know that it should only be included once. It is much better for the header file's implementer to write the file so that users don't need to know this. Using a wrapper, if not defined, accomplishes this goal. And that strikes me as being really wrong-headed. Yes?
Yeah, I'm on the pound import side of the fence here.
Well, it's just, I mean, I've used pound import for every single include statement for every language I've used, well, at least every C-based language I've used, for the last 5 years, and it's just never been a problem. And it's kept me from having to write all those stupid macros at the beginning and end of every header file. So I'm not sure what the problem is.
Well, basically, like pound import takes away a feature, right? It's like you can't include a header file twice then.
Yes, but why would you do that?
I have seen some magic do it, but the occurrences seem exceedingly rare.
Well, and when the times when you do need that, you use include. We're not saying don't use it. Anyway, so just wanted to – so thank you, Michael Buckley, for bringing that specific piece to our attention. And that's about it.
Okay. So, Andrew, have you had a chance to ever write any AppleScript?
I have written some AppleScript, actually.
Okay. Have you ever written any scriptable apps?
I've written a few features. There were some things in Xcode that used AppleScript that either I might not have ever added it, but I certainly maintained some of that code, or at least, okay, fine. I might have just looked at that code. I don't know.
That'd be enough to scar you right there.
I know how it works, or at least I used to. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I want to kind of talk about the what's really awesome about AppleScript and what isn't awesome about AppleScript. And I realize that, you know, the great thing about this podcast is that, you know, this would be totally a really painful blog posting to write, right, with all the references, all that. But it's like just writing out the outline and talking about it is so much more, you know, something we can actually do in less than an hour. So,
right.
Yeah, mm-hmm. it's for some reason, podcasts are really good at facilitating this type of, I forget what Syracuse calls it, but yeah, the kind of like ad hoc type stuff.
Yeah.
But, so the first thing I want to reference is that there's this guy, William Cook, and he was basically project lead and a developer of AppleScript back in the early 90s. I think he mentioned 1991. And he spoke at a conference, which is an ACM conference. And in general, I'm not a big fan of the ACM, but they have this conference called the History of Programming Languages, which I attended. And that was the third one. And they seem to have one of these every decade. So that was in 2007. And so the next Hopple 4 should take place in 2017. And I want to tell everyone I'll see you there. This is not an announcement, but I assume that, you know, they seem to have it once a decade. And William Cook gave a talk and wrote a paper about his experience implementing and architecting AppleScript. And I think it's, and so I'll be putting that in the show notes. Unfortunately, the ACM paper is behind a paywall, but there is a freely available draft version of it. I got the ACM paper as part of attending Howl, so that's what I'm using for my reference. But it looks like the draft version that's on his website looks pretty much, has pretty much the same information, maybe slightly formatted, maybe there's a few typos or something like that, but pretty much looks, seems one-to-one. So I'll throw that link in there if you guys want to follow along. It's about 20 pages, and it's definitely worth reading if you are interested in what we're about to talk about. So I'll just kind of get into what's really awesome about AppleScript. That first I'll start off in terms of like the business and political nature of it, is that AppleScript arguably saved Apple. And can you, do you know what I'm talking about here, Andrew, or can you hazard a guess?
No, I don't think so.
So not at all.
I mean, I know, I can make guesses.
Okay, well, instead of randomly throwing darts at the wall, I think right. I'll give you the bullet point.
Tell us.
So AppleScript was one of the technologies that was on the chopping block alongside Newton and OpenDoc in 1997. So it was slated to be killed, to big time go away. And Cal Simone, have you ever met Cal Simone?
Cal Simone, no.
Okay. Nope. Cal Simone was basically a third-party AppleScript evangelist. And I don't know if it's the first, but it definitely was one of the very early ones. It was a program called Scripter that allowed you to debug AppleScripts, because even today, Script Editor, or I guess it's called AppleScript Editor nowadays, still doesn't have like breakpoints or look at variables or anything like that. It has this like printf.
No, it does not.
Yeah, printf style debugging, maybe.
Right.
Although I guess it's in AppleScript's case, it's display dialog style debugging.
Right.
And so AppleScript had a, I'm sorry, Cal Simone had a AppleScript debugger called Scripter. And so he obviously did not want his app to go away. So he rallied his customers, which apparently was the mostly in the publication industry. And so remember, 1997 were really dark years for Apple. This is before the iMac. This was, you know, this was when Wired was printing the Prey cover story, right?
Right.
So this was
when SJ came back.
Right. Yeah. This I think it was. This was around. I think the number I heard was Apple had 5 months cash for payroll left.
Right. So hard for people to understand anymore.
Yeah, that's near right. That so definitely very dark days, and arguably the reason why Apple was able to just hold its breath long enough was because the publishing industry could not stop buying Macs, because they had to set up workflows with Quark Express and AppleScript and FileMaker, mostly Express. But so they had automated workflows, and they need to print magazines. They need to print whatever they think the publishing industry does. And they, so when it came, big jobs came in, they had to buy more Macs or they had to replace broken Macs. So they basically were not in a position to not buy Macs until Apple actually was dead. So basically Apple was a provider of a legacy system, and they had this customer base who could not leave them.
Well, and you're saying especially here that people couldn't switch to Windows machines,
right?
Because they had automated through AppleScript. Otherwise, all of these apps were available on Windows.
Exactly.
So,
yes. Yeah. So AppleScript was the key technology that actually allowed Apple to survive. So you have the iPhone in your pocket today is because of AppleScript back in 1997. So that's, and well, who is it? Was it James Burke who had the connections videos? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Not offhand.
Oh my God, you're missing out of a big piece of your life. I'll throw a link in there for you.
Okay.
So, that's kind of from the business and political standpoint. AppleScript is awesome in that point. So it basically saved the Apple we know today, or maybe the Apple back there died. You know, we can make an argument on that. But so now I want to go into all the rest. Will be technical, which will be much more fun, and. So, first thing, so when you, AppleScript is obviously a scripting system, and one of the interesting things about it, and it sounds horrible to people at first, is that your scripts are not saved in text. Right? Actually, you can save in a .applescript format, which is text, but by default, it's saved in this format, .scpt. And do you actually know why it's saved in this binary format, Andrew?
No, I don't.
Okay, wow. See, this is, I'm just educating you left and right.
Indeed.
So the scripts are saved in a binary token format. And this is because scripts are stored in a language-independent internal representation.
Oh, okay, right.
So one of the really cool things about AppleScript is that, you know, Apple is an international company, and so they wanted an international scripting system. And, you know, in today's programming languages, don't even pretend not to be English-based, right? English has basically walked right over all hope of any sort of language diversity. I mean, human language diversity. And, I mean, even maths with Ruby, right? Very, very Japanese. Like, you know, that it was, I mean, Ruby was so Japanese to the point where, like, you know, all the mailing list was in Japanese. Like, no one could figure it out. And it was only, like, when the Ruby programming language, the Pickaxe book, came out, that it explained it in English, that, you know, that the English-speaking world could figure this language out. But even then, you know, very, very Japanese. And even then, like, the classes were named string and object and all these English words. So, right. Yeah. So English, so AppleScript had a different tact on it, that the scripts you could write in English. And for our audience who has not seen AppleScript, AppleScript looks very English. It tends to lack punctuation instead of has a disturbing lack of curly braces and parentheses and semicolons. And it says, it's literally like, tell application finder, open file, blah, 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 and tell. I mean, that's pretty much valid AppleScript, which is it seems very wordy, and it reads like English, which we'll talk a little bit about the problems of later. And the interesting thing about AppleScript is that you could write a script in English, and it would read like English, grammatically correct English mostly, kind of fragmented and all that, but it looks like English. You could save it and send it to your friend in Japan, and when he would open it up, it would actually be grammatically correct Japanese.
Would it go so far as to move things around based on the grammar? Wow.
Yes. It was actually saving the tokenized description of what events it represented instead of the text itself. And dictionaries, I mean, that's one of the problems of AppleScript, is that when you're specifying your scripting dictionary, you would have to, like, say whether this verb was masculine or feminine. And you're like, what the hell? But that's because, you know, a lot of languages have masculine and feminine verbs.
So, sure.
Yeah. And so this actually worked for English, Japanese, and French that I know of.
Well, you mean verbs or you mean nouns?
Verbs and nouns, I think.
Verbs and nouns, yeah.
Well, I would have to go back to my res files to see what, but I thought it was verbs, but in Miami it was just nouns. But okay. It was definitely, anyway. It was asking me questions, lingual questions, that I didn't have answers for. So I'm sure the dictionary, scripting dictionaries I wrote didn't look so good in Japanese. So that's really cool. Unfortunately, this ability, and I mean, it's kind of like the Esperanto thing, right? The idea of the universal language that all other languages could be, you know, translated to like, you know, it's like when you're converting image file formats. If you want to do GIF to JPEG, that's one code path. If you want to do JPEG to GIF, that's another format. If you want to do PNG to GIF, that's another path. And you realize you get this combinational explosion of, but if you have this one meta format in the middle that, you know, you can do from PNG to meta format, and then meta format to GIF, then you get more, you don't have to code all those code paths. And so, you know, Esperanto was kind of the same thing with human languages, but of course it was like this 60s flower child dream or something, and never took off, and arguably we could have taken off. I mean, I guess English has unfortunately dominated the world, but I'm sure actually probably the French people listening to this would disagree with that, although could they understand me? Maybe not, I don't know. But anyway, I kind of digress, but that's a really cool feature. And unfortunately, that feature, which I used to use to kind of like break the the AppleScript ICE with fellow programmers, because usually when I mention AppleScript to fellow programmers, they'd be like, oh yeah, that's the thing that reads like English. What a bad idea. And it is a bad idea. But I would say, well, did you know AppleScript could do this? And they're like, and that would be like when they would realize that there's something very deep here and very amazingly technical that like no one else has pulled off. And then it would open their eyes and say, oh, well, tell me more. Unfortunately, that language, which was called dialects, was dropped. I think it was dropped circa Mac OS 9 or maybe even 8.6 or something like that. That's just because it was very rarely used. And, you know, Apple was in the death spiral and people being put onto more crucial projects and blah, blah, blah. So that AppleScript lacks that really cool feature now, which it used to have. Oh, well. But in the basic design of AppleScript, it's really interesting because it reads like English. And one of the powerful things about AppleScript is that the idea of having verbs that are separated from nouns. So the idea here is that, as Coco programmers, we tend to think of classes, and classes have methods. And C.V. Yegi wrote the classic piece called Execution in the Kingdom of Nouns. Have you read that article or blog posting, I guess?
I have not.
Okay. And you're this ignorant sap. Anyway, sorry.
No, really, Wolf. Tell me how you feel.
Oh, that's going to be a great rejected title. But
wait, you always provide really great potential titles for episodes, I got to tell you.
So basically, Yegi's post is, and basically makes fun of this idea of in the kingdom of nouns, which is calling Java land. In Java land, by King Java's royal decree, verbs are owned by nouns. And this entire idea about how things are really hard to do when all you have are nouns. And not all you have is nouns, but verbs are owned by nouns. And Objective-C has the same problem, that methods are owned by classes. So if you want to have a method that is common to all objects, you pretty much have to move that up the class hierarchy to something like NSObject. And this is pretty much a well-understood problem in a language design. And AppleScript separates verbs from, or what we know as methods, from the things they operate on. So one of the things that AppleScript does is that it has standard English verbs. And these include like make, delete, open, close, get, set, duplicate, move, save, select, count, exists. And these can operate on any noun you want to aim at. So for example, the delete command can delete paragraphs from a word processor, it can delete rectangles from a graphics editor, or can delete files from the file system. So even you have this very, you have these programs that do very different things, the single delete verb or command can operate across all these different applications and problem domains. So it tends to be conceptually simpler because now you don't have to have all these, like, you'll have like all these, name or set name, address, set address, or instead you just have this data model and you have get and set verbs and you're done. And that those get and set verbs can be applied to your data model. So it definitely is a complexity reduction in that point. In fact, it's similar to the Unix file system and kind of like the Unix philosophy and the Unix way of doing things, where you have your nouns, which essentially are your file system, and you have the root, and then you have everything underneath it, and then you can do operations on this file system, and operating systems tend to have things like even virtual directories. Like Linux has the procfs, or the process file system, which is a pseudo file system. I think it's under /proc, and you can actually see your processes as files. And so all the verbs that operate on the file system now operate on your processes. So if you want to get a list of your processes, you ls/proc. So the idea of having these standard verbs can be applied to like Unix. So as Unix has a similar idea, but Apple Script tend to be offer more verbs, at least, well, more standard verbs, and those applied to both the elements, and you could also have properties on these objects. So am I changing your mind, Apple Script, yet, or?
Not at all.
Okay, good. I didn't think I would, but anyway. another cool thing about Apple Script is that I'm talking like it's dead, but it has
nice.
Directly integrated query language. So the idea where you could say every window whose title contains Z, that's valid Apple Script. And in order to do things like that, we have like NS Predicate or something like that. And that's obviously its own class. Probably the closest thing I can think of is C-sharp's Link, which is a language integrated query, which basically embeds SQL-esque statements right in your C-sharp. And I wouldn't be surprised, actually, if Objective-C, which seems to be getting more... I saw your tweet today where you talked about how you're trying to get used to using the array subscripting syntax.
Yeah.
You have to remind yourself you can actually do this, right?
Yep.
I wouldn't be surprised if one day we don't have something like language integrated query in Objective-C.
Wasn't that is that also for XML operations, or am I thinking of something else?
It's well, how it's implemented is that it can. You might be thinking of the JavaScript XML for JavaScript or something like that.
No, we shouldn't necessarily get diverted by this. But anyway, so go on.
Yeah. So it actually can have different pluggable backends. And kind of like how Core Data, you can throw an NS predicate or something against both the in-memory store or the SQL store, and it will do the query, you know, iteratively if it's in-memory store, or like generate SQL for the SQLite store. Similar to that.
Sure.
Okay. And so what's interesting is that this directly integrated query language actually kind of fell out of a limitation of the classic Mac OS. The classic Mac OS, for various reasons, was, of course, a cooperative multitasking environment. And not only that, but it had a maximum of 60 process switches per second. And that was mostly because you had to swap out all the low-memory globals, which took some time, and swap in the other processes one, and then you'd basically have to flush the processor cache with your. If you do that too often, you throw performance in the toilet. And so the classic Mac OS was not a fine-grained system. So if you think about it, these scripts, how AppleScript works is that it sends these things called Apple events, and these were limited in the classic Mac OS to about 60 per second. So you can imagine a complicated script that's trying to do thousands of operations would take minutes and minutes just because it's hitting the 60 process switches per second bottleneck. So this is kind of the problem that's basically, you can almost think of the classic Mac OS as a high latency environment. And what AppleScript is doing is remote communication, which ends up which is actually applicable to the internet. And a lot of the problems that we have in modern kind of, you know, you have your iOS app and it's communicating with a database on your web server through HTTP, right? And how do you efficiently deal with this and model this? And AppleScript is actually a design pattern here, at least its idea. Is that you can refer to things in terms of these queries or in terms of symbolic references, and you don't have to move the objects across the wire as much as you would think, and you can have pretty good throughput even if you have a high latency environment, so you can have a responsive app. So I don't know if I don't want to go into too much detail about how that applies, but I want to mention that this is actually a pattern that can actually. It typifies a design pattern that's actually applicable to modern iOS programming even. So that's really interesting.
Sure.
And compare this, for example, to like RPC. Typified by, on the Mac, we have distributed objects. On Windows, they have COM and Visual Basic as a front end to that. and you have these like proxy objects that you have local, and you query them because you think they're local, and that tends to, in a high latency environment, that's death. And so since AppleScript had this really bad bottleneck to deal with, they want to basically make queries and command. They want to make commands, kind of their own entities, and kind of they kind of batch up complexity on that, and then they can send that over the wire. So you want to reduce the number of round trips. Okay. Another thing that was cool about AppleScript is that it, in order to implement this thing called recording, which allowed the user to just kind of hit the record button in script editor, or AppleScript editor nowadays, and then it would magically write the scripts for you in an English-like syntax, kind of recording what you've done, so that way you then can hit the stop button, hit play again, and now you can go to the beach because your computer's doing all your work for you. If you're only that great, huh?
Right.
And so in order to pull that off, Apple said that you should basically cleave your app in two, and you should have the GUI portion of it. And whenever the user clicks on something or pulls down a menu or activates a contextual menu, what you should do, instead of invoking directly the methods behind that, you should send yourself an Apple event. And the idea there is that the AppleScript system could actually see those events taking place, and it goes to your backend of your app, and it could then transcribe them, and then using your scripting dictionary, it could write that English sentence for you that said, "Oh, the user just opened this file." So this, in practicality nowadays, very few applications will send themselves an event to do anything. Cocos definitely doesn't have that design. Well, I don't know if it even has explicit support for that, but it's definitely very odd way of doing things. Although the idea of having a kind of, you can think of your app as many apps you can think of in terms of this, you can cleave in terms of like something that that can operate without a GUI, and the part of the app that does have the graphical interface. And so we even see that division in frameworks, where we have Foundation, which is something that can be used by command line apps and doesn't assume a Windows system, doesn't, or anything like that. And then you have AppKit and UIKit, which is, and then assumes, okay, I have a Windows system, and layers the complexity on there.
Yeah, this topic could be a whole show in and of itself.
Sure.
It sounds great. I find that in practice, it often means that if you were to stick to that model, you would be depriving yourself of the ability to make a really responsive and elegant UI, because you'd be cutting yourself off from certain coalescing patterns that you really need in order to make stuff work. Like I found Undo Redo has a lot of these same patterns these days, and of course every app should really support Undo Redo. Of course many don't, but you have a lot of the same problems there. But if you try to use that same engine where you say, oh, when I first do something and when I undo, redo something, I'm always just sending the same event to the server, you know, my backend, my low-level app core, it doesn't work because they're not the same thing at the UI level. So I could go on about that.
Yeah, that's actually, I'm glad you mentioned the coalescing thing, because the example that William Cook actually uses in his paper is like user types in hello, and what ends up showing is three events, type H, type E, type L, type L, type O. And yeah, so the coalescing those events is definitely, it's a hard problem.
Yeah.
But you're right, this is definitely a ripe topic we probably want to come back to. Okay, so now we get to the fun stuff, which is kind of the rantish stuff, which is the problems with AppleScript. And probably the first problem, which I alluded to before, is that AppleScript reads like English. It looks like English. So the standard knock against Perl is that it's a write-only language. That the idea that when your head is in the Perl game and you can keep track of all the implicitly updated global variables with two character names that are both like dollar sign something, like, well, then you can write code. It's very terse, it's very efficient, but you go back later and you read it and it reads like line noise. That there's unless you have the Perl model in your head, and it's really hard to pick it up and figure out what the code is doing. So the standard knock against AppleScript is that it's read only. That you look at it and it's very obvious what it does. You write out another English sentence and says syntax error.
Yes. All the friggin' time.
That is totally the knock against AppleScript. That's totally right. That for programmers who live on being very explicit about what we're doing, using English as a command as a way to like serialize your commands, what you want the computer to do, it turns out to be a really bad idea. It results in the kind of like language twisting that you often see in legal contracts. Like legal English is its own world, right? Because they're supposedly using English language, but they totally are using, you know, a subset of English there, and they're using keywords that just don't show up in everyday language. So it's very much, it's basically abusing English to be anything other than, I mean, English itself has so many problems. But to try to shoehorn it into these structures where you have to be very specific and regular, it's a kind of a recipe for disaster. And so,
they make it worse by saying, "Well, this is just an English-like language. You don't need a lot of documentation to write it." Whereas what they actually need is more documentation to tell you, "Well, here's how you actually make these sentences do things in a way that, you know, as you said, the parser will support." Mm-hmm. I found it was very frustrating finding out how to do the very simplest of things because everyone thought it was easy, so they didn't tell you how.
Oh, it's absolutely terrible, especially like I was, you know, I remember banging my head against the wall trying to learn AppleScript to try and get my English sentences to execute at all or correctly. And I'm fortunate that Cal Simone came to my Macintosh user group back in the day and kind of like, "Oh no, you're thinking about this wrong. This is how AppleScript works." And once you understand, like under the hood, how everything works, now you're able to do this supposedly high level, you know, user-friendly thing, right? Where you understand how to write these sentences.
So if you understand all the leaks from the abstractions, you can write it.
Yeah, and that's pretty much my knock against AppleScript and why, I'll talk about it a little bit later. But so that is a big problem with AppleScript. Another point, kind of a tangential point on here, but still definitely related to the English problem, is that from William Cook's article, he says, "AppleScript was designed for casual users. AppleScript syntax resembles natural language. So I really hate to quote Stroustrup, but Barnes Stroustrup, the creator of C++.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. I'm going there. And so we were going to have to do like probably a two-parter show on C++ or one of these days. But
do we have to?
Okay, maybe not. But much like I have complicated feelings with C++, like I also have complicated feelings about Stroustrup. But I read an article interview they had a while back, and I was really taken with one point that he made, and I'll have a quote from him that we don't have as an aim that architecture of buildings and engineering of bridges and trains should become more accessible to people with progressively less training. And his point was basically that programmers have this, in general, have this idea that, man, if we just made programming more easy, then the users would do it. Right? It's weird because it's kind of an egotism. It's kind of self-centeredism or something that we just think, oh, everyone wants to program. It's just we need to make it easier for them. Maybe they're just not as smart as we are, right?
Well, and, didn't this blow up on Twitter recently where people were saying that, you know, people like some celebrities were saying, "Oh, I'm going to start programming now," and like Will Shipley or something. It might not have been Will Shipley, but someone of his stature in the community was like, "No, don't do it." Right? Do you remember that?
I may have missed the boat on that one, yeah. but it strikes me as probably as par for course. And you know, I have to say, I was, you know, in my earlier days, I was definitely thought that, you know, we need to make programming easier, and that's the problem, is that we just have all these, you know, don't get me wrong, I still think there's tons of stupidity in programming today. and there's a lot of stuff we can wring out to make programming easier and more powerful at the same time. However, you know, now I think that the idea of trying to make it so that everyone can program is disrespectful to other people, that other people are good at what they do and we're good at what we do, and we should respect that diversity and enable each other to do great things. Man, that sounds so Tony Robbins.
Well, there's the way I would put it is there's an inherent complexity in writing a program that you can't simplify past a certain point. Like, there was a friend of mine a long time ago who said, well, you know, I want a tool where I can just diagram the logic and be that and do that, you know, don't need to write anything. And I said, well, that diagram, it really showed all your logic would be this, you know, snarl of all sorts of lines going back and forth because the logic is complicated.
Right.
So.
Mm-hmm. Although, you know, often we can, like, how many times have you taken, like, this really hairy, like, scanner or something, and finally, now that, you know, can plug in a regular expression, you could reduce it down to, like, 5 characters. But again, those characters themselves represent a lot of a lot of complexity.
Well, and making a more complex pattern into a simpler pattern is its own form of complexity because, you know, you've applied a transformation, which is now just in your head, to this thing. To understand why that simpler pattern even works is hard.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep, absolutely. Oh, too bad we're in violent agreement about this. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. We need to find more stuff that we are against each other on.
Well, I believe you called
more interesting.
I believe you called me an ignorant sap earlier. So
yes,
there's
I did.
There's still some conflict here, I think.
Okay. There you go. Okay. So so since we're still talking about AppleScript English, I did find some interesting quotes in the Wilm Cook paper. Number one, readability was important because it was one way to check that scripts did not contain malicious code. And so I thought it was actually an interesting point. You know, you look at a script on the internet, and even if you're a Joe user, if you see it's open up address book and then and then uploading it to path, hey, maybe I shouldn't be running this script. However, later on, Wilm Cook says, readability was no substitute for effective security mechanism. Most people just run scripts. They don't read them.
Right.
So that's probably true too. And then another point along the AppleScript English point, which is I think is really interesting, is that I told you that AppleScript supported multiple dialects. So English was one of them, and of course we have the Japanese and French, as I mentioned. But one of the dialects was a so-called professional dialect, and I put air quotes there that you can't see. And the professional dialect looked a lot more like Java, as he described it. But I would actually say it doesn't look like Java very much. And I recommend you read the paper, or at least scroll down to the figure there where he gives an example of what the professional dialect. Like, he lists English, and then he lists Japanese, and then he lists what the professional dialect would look like. And it looked very programmery-ish, but they developed this professional dialect internally for them to develop against and test against and think about and all this. They never released it. It's Apple internal. And so I can totally understand not wanting to release the so-called professional dialect, right? Because it strikes me as the same idea of not having the arrow keys on the original Macintosh, right? Because this would totally be a crutch for developers to use to write scripts and then share with their users. That said, I give two reasons why the professional dialect actually doesn't have that problem. And that, number one, because it's a dialect, and remember, AppleScript had this ability to basically span human languages. And so I could, as a developer, I actually could use the professional dialect, and then I could save the script and give it to you, and when you opened it up, you'd see English. So although most of the documentation tends to be kind of directly in the language, in the dialect, so that there'd be all sorts of documentation problems and all that. So there's some good reasons there. And in my opinion, that AppleScript is basically dead now. And I think releasing the professional dialect would actually help AppleScript a lot. I think the English experiment has failed. And shipping the professional dialect, even though the dialect machinery is all gone, obviously that had to be all reanimated or what have you. But professional dialect would help AppleScript immensely at this point.
Why do you say that?
Just because English English dialect has failed. I mean, there definitely is this core contingency of people who use AppleScript even today, and that wouldn't stop working. But in order to lure a new generation of people to AppleScript, I mean, AppleScript still has a bunch of problems, which I'm going to go through here, but I think that that would help get developers interested in it and not just whatever core group is left of AppleScript now.
Okay.
Okay. So, of course, AppleScript was followed by poor developer communication, and this resulted in misunderstanding by developers. Like the entire thing where, you know, AppleScript has verbs and nouns was basically, I saw a lot of apps that didn't understand this, and they would have very much, like carbon method names or something, carbon function names. You know, you would have like get user address book first name, and that would be one verb all intercase camel cased. Instead of just having, well, this application has a user, and user has a first name, and these are all nouns with properties, and they contain each other, and you can just use the standard get verb. So there was a lot of misunderstanding by developers, and which is interesting. I initially put down this bullet point as saying it was there wasn't good documentation. And looking back on it, there actually was a lot of documentation, but it was, I mean, do you remember Develop Magazine?
I do.
Yeah. I love Develop Magazine. It was really high quality. I understand it costs an arm and leg to make for Apple back in the day, but, you know, this was pre-web, folks. So yeah. this is how developer information got sent around. And the articles were kind of hard to follow. And so really it was more that the technology itself was complicated. I don't think Apple did a good job of kind of boxing the message and saying, okay, these are you have verbs, you have nouns, this is how you support things. Instead, it was wrapped up in a lot of kind of intellectual theory, and of course there was a fantastic lack of example code, like good example code. So, and this kind of boils down to that Apple events themselves, which is the mechanism that AppleScript rides upon, are clumsy. Apple events nowadays ride on top of mock messages, and they Apple events are a way for running processes to communicate each other by sending messages. And of course, today we'd be like saying, "Oh, you know, send HTTP messages with JSON or something, and you're good to go." And of course, nowadays we even have XBC that explicitly encodes that. And I guess now that 10.8 is out, we can even say now there's like standard serialization mechanisms for taking like NS arrays of NS dictionaries and jamming them into something that XBC can understand and shuttling them over some sort of wire. I don't know whether XBC is using mock messaging underneath the covers, probably, but something like that.
Believe it is.
Yeah. So you have to understand that, you know, in these days, when Apple events came out, this was System 7, and Mac apps were written in C and maybe C++. And we barely had standard collection classes because of the primitive systems we were using. So Apple events basically had to ship this API for offering a basic collection system that was slow as all get out, and it offered this complicated API where a lot of this involved memory management. Of course, on the Mac, classic Mac, every memory management operation could fail. So as things as simple as adding an object to a dictionary would take five lines of code, each one returning an error.
Yep.
So Apple events have always been clumsy. Of course, nowadays we have collection classes and we can ship things, and we can have automatic serialization and deserialization. So unfortunately, Apple events, you know, it was implemented in a far worse time. And so it's very clumsy and is a technology that needs to die.
There's our title.
Of course, then there the Apple event handlers, and specifically the object specifier resolution callbacks, are very hard to implement. And I think Gus Mueller mentioned that it took him more time to like implement like one feature in AppleScript with some sort of object resolution thing than it took him to like implement it in all of JS Talk support or something, which we'll talk about. Additionally, so the thing with AppleScript is that it's a very small core language, and it's heavily reliant on different applications supplying very good scripting dictionaries. And with the poor developer communication and the misunderstanding of developers, this was also coupled with really bad authoring, dictionary authoring and editing tools. So,
oh my God, yes.
Oh, so it sounds like you've been bitten here. So you have any recollection of having to edit the 80 resources?
I think I must have. I've had to deal with some aspect of yes. I don't remember exactly what the details were, but yes, something along those lines.
Okay, so the AETE back in the resources land, back when we had resources on the Mac, stood for Apple Event Terminology Extensions, and this was very well, I wouldn't say it's poorly documented, but Apple basically offered no tools for editing these except for Res. And your only other choice was to buy Resourcer, which I understand was a very great resource editor, which back then I could not afford.
So you never bought it?
I never bought it, no.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think actually that might have been one reason to buy Resourcer for me, yeah, is because it would let me write those resources out more easily.
Yeah. And so, yeah, so that's actually why I got comfortable with Res, because I wanted to build my 80 resources. And I can't believe, is this two episodes in a row we're talking about Res? How gray-haired
yes,
are we?
Yes, it is.
Oh, boy. All right. So dictionary editing was horrendous. And fortunately, nowadays, Apple has a format called SDEF, for scripting definition. And it's XML-based and much more sane. I mean, it's still a pretty complicated XML format, but you can pop open a text editor, and you don't need specialized binary editing tools.
You know what, for just for truth purposes, no, I think I've only edited SDEF files. Oh. I haven't edited the old ones. Okay. So I got Resourcer for some other reason.
Okay.
Just so people don't get the wrong idea.
I don't want to let people know you're hanging out with the wrong crowd. The 80 editing crowd. And so at the final C4, this was kind of one of the things I mentioned in my talk, was I took way too much time photoshopping the Apple script, like script editor icon or whatever, into a coffin. And actually it's funny to like kind of do Google image search for coffins, because for some reason, like I think it was Taiwan is a big manufacturer of coffins. So I was spending a lot of time on Taiwanese sites in languages I didn't understand, and kind of shop around for coffin images. It had to be at the right angle. I had to have it open. Anyway, while we're talking about coffins, hooray.
TMI.
Anyway, so I've listed all the problems here. Actually, not all of them, but a lot of the problems of Apple Script.
Not an exhaustive list.
And I recommend that if you're writing a new Mac app, don't support Apple Script. I've said
Support Apple Events. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, no, then don't support Apple Script. I mean, Apple Events, you basically can't not support them. I mean, there's a basic set.
Right.
That gives you the open document and print document and quit, right? But those are the core ones, and you can't. But Apple Script is not worth implementing. Unless your users are absolutely clamoring for it, but I would recommend that Gus Mueller wrote a system called JS Talk. And JS Talk rides on top of distributed objects, so it's very much more like RPC and what have you. And the language is JavaScript, although you can use square braces. And basically at this point, it's like you're fooling yourself if your scripters aren't programmers. And I think you just assume they may be not programmers full-time, however, but they need to have a real environment, a real language. And not an English one. And JS Talk basically gives you access to Cocoa through a bridge system from JavaScript. So JavaScript is probably the most popular kind of amateur language out there. Maybe PHP is up there too, and definitely Visual Basic, although I'm sure that Visual Basic is falling down in the charts. And so JavaScript is really popular, and JS Talk allows you to use square braces and NS objects and stuff like that in your JS, in your little scripts there. And uses distributed objects that allows you to talk to other applications. So, and to implement distributed objects support is two lines of code. And if you don't care about security, you're basically done. this expose your application. And but if you do care about
security,
if you do care about security, then you probably actually want to have real classes up there. And like you basically expose an object that's meant, you expose an instance of a class, and that class is meant to only field, you know, remote requests from the users that are for scripting purposes, instead of just allowing them to access things willy-nilly. And JS Talk, the main problem with JS Talk is the discoverability of things. Like, so the scripting dictionaries, though they're very confusing to users, at least they do basically have a list of things you can do and possibilities. And that doesn't exist at all with JS Talk. Maybe there's some sort of like dynamic introspection type stuff you can do, but I've never seen that done. And so you basically have to tell users what methods you support. But it ends up looking a lot like Objective-C without the type declarations. So Cocoa programmers would be perfectly comfortable with this. And it does mean that basically then your scripting users would have to write stuff that looks a lot like Cocoa, but at least it won't have manual memory management, and it will tend to be for shorter segments of, it's not like you're writing a full-scale Cocoa app there. This will be like, tell the app to do this, tell the app to do that, what have you. So I definitely recommend as JS Talk as the replacement for Apple Script's glorious failure.
Well, I would say that this might even push some people to, if they do support JS Talk, actually provide example scripts with it.
That's a really good idea. Yeah. I think that Gus also uses his JS Talk support to actually, at a higher level, test his apps. So, you know, he basically can run down the line and test a bunch of things that would be hard to test in unit tests, and kind of like application integration type stuff.
Right, and I would hope it would be a little more stable as well. One of the things I found when we tried to use AppleScript to do that, to run an app through its paces, is that it would just sometimes not work for unknown and non-repeatable reasons.
Wow.
So,
I have not run into that. In fact, I would probably think that's maybe an indication of your scripting implementation probably being not up to par. But again, this is a problem with AppleScript in general. That's really hard for application developers to correctly implement AppleScript. And so with distributed objects, you're just exposing an object to be called remotely. So it's much easier.
Good.
Okay, so that wraps up my awesomeness points and my problems point. And AppleScript was so, you know, it had such a really interesting philosophy about it. And it shipped some really cool technology that I feel gets a short shrift here. But it was a few years back that I finally had to throw in the towel and stop evangelizing it and saying, we need to move on. It's not worth it anymore.
Yeah, well, it does sound like probably some areas that you could expand upon. If you want, I would certainly encourage you to write blog post or two.
You know, I do this podcast, so I don't have to write blog posts.
I understand that. I understand that.
Yeah, so that wraps up for me. Anything for you?
No, I think that's it. Oh, actually, so I will say that I did make it sound like I hate C++. I don't hate C++. I'm actually probably, of the people I know who are Cocoa programmers, I'm actually one of the people more sympathetic to it. But I'm not sure whether it's exactly the sort of thing that would take us, 2 hours to go through in a podcast. So
okay. Well, that's interesting. Sure. I've been trying to, I'm definitely a C++ evangelist, but I'm not the full-scale hater that I've seen some people are. So it made me sympathetic. It kind of assumes that something bad has gone on. So sympathy might be a good verb there.
Yeah, and we might want to do something targeted about a specific C++ issue just to give it that.
Oh, how about C++ 11? That's targeted, right? 500 new features or something? I don't know.
Oh, 11. I thought you said C++ 11. All right. Never mind. Okay.
I did. I think there might be an XO in front there. I don't know. Or OX in front there. I'm not even sure how to say it. I've been pretty much out of the loop there.
Okay. Well, we'll discuss this offline.
Okay.
All right. So thanks for listening. Please also visit our website, edgecasesshow.com, all one word, for show notes, a link to our podcast on iTunes, and more. You can also find us individually on Twitter. Myself, A. Pontius, A-P-O-N-T-I-O-U-S, and Wolf, his last name, Wrench, the word rent, R-E-N-T, plus Z, plus S-C-H. And we'll see you next time. Bye.